History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. By now, we've learned they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and take the time to listen. You really never know where that conversation might lead, and today's episode is going to be a powerful example of that. Our goal, above all, is to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in the process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Last time, we met a 97-year-old Montana cowboy named Durrell Gibbs, who survived the Battle of Okinawa in World War II. There is a much more recent chapter to his story that we didn't have time for, but we're going to explore that today with Durrell and his son, Wes. If you missed the first part of Durrell's story, you can access it online at hometownheroesradio.com. But the key moment that today's episode is going to center around came in his foxhole on Okinawa in 1945.
I'd done my watch, and I was trying to get a little shut-eye, and Sergeant was standing there doing his watch, and all of a sudden, I was just being walked on, and I was hearing him grunt, and a Jap soldier had crawled up, and it was a hand-to-hand situation. I come up out of that hole. Well, there was two of us, and it was pretty dark night. That Jap, he died right there. Laid him off the side of the hole, and we spent the rest of the night. The next morning, real early, we was going to move out, and I seen that that Jap soldier had a pistol, so I wanted, it was always for souvenirs, so I wanted to get that pistol. While I was taking that pistol off of him, he had a wallet up here on his jacket or whatever they call him, in a pocket, and that wallet was really protected. It had a heavy cloth and cut fancy. That wallet surprised me, and so I was getting a pistol. I just put that wallet in my pocket, and we was moving out, and I never thought any more about it.
But he brought it home, and to understand how that wallet would end up changing many lives, we need to bring in Durrell's son, Wes. And let's start with this. How old do you think you were, Wes, when you started to understand that your dad had served in World War II?
Probably the earliest days of being a little boy and playing outside. My brother was 3 years older than me, so we were good buddies, you know. And I mean, when we were 4, 5, and 6, we were playing Army and playing outside, and Dad had a little suitcase that he brought back home with some things from the war inside there. And so we were always kind of looking at that stuff. And, you know, back then playing war, Mom had gotten us a couple of little Army helmets, and, you know, that was a big deal for us. And somewhere in there, I became aware that Dad had been a soldier, and I was really proud of that, really excited about that. You know, soldiers were all heroes in my mind, and to know that he had done that. So, yeah, I would say 4 or 5 on up.
Did he ever tell you much about what he'd done over there?
No, you know, I always wanted to know more, especially when I was 10, 11, 12, you know, a teenager. Dad would share some incidents, but usually they were incidents of funny things. You know, I wanted to know more about particular battlefield incidents, but he never did share too much of that.
And what are some of the things you remember being in that box that you got to play with or explore?
Well, I remember there were some of his medals, awards in there, and you know, my brother and I, Dad also had a trunk with his uniform, and, you know, I'm sad to say now, we wore those things around, and he kind of knew we were wearing those, and unfortunately, they didn't get saved. I still have his dress hat, and I remember there were some photographs from the war. There was the wallet that he's talked a little about. He didn't try to keep us from looking in there, but he always made sure that we, at least on that item, kept it special. We weren't allowed to play with it. We could look in it. I remember from the earliest time that we looked in it, the photographs were in there that always caught our attention, and there was a piece of Japanese money, some currency in there, but the pictures I remember mostly.
And did he tell you what it was or how he got it, or was just this kind of mysterious wallet that you knew you were supposed to be careful with?
Yeah, you know, I think all I knew at the time was that he had taken it from a dead Japanese soldier. So probably I was a young adult when I fully understood that. But we knew back at that time that it had come from a dead Japanese soldier. And even back then, he had expressed interest in knowing more about that family and possibly getting it back to the family of that soldier. And it just boggled my mind how, first of all, you know, how he would think that that would ever be possible and why he would want that to happen. I just couldn't quite grasp that.
So Wes says he had a hard time understanding why you thought it would even be possible to reunite this wallet with the family. Or why that even mattered to you. Can you help us understand that?
I don't know why it mattered. It was over a period of years as these kids were growing up. And here's this wallet with pictures of kids that he had on them. And the way the wallet was, it wasn't just stuffed in a pocket. The way he had it, I could tell that that wallet meant a lot to him. That's why I took it to begin with. Well, I didn't even think. I was taking the pistol, the wallet was there, and it was outstanding, and I just put it in my pocket. It was a slow process because I didn't think anything about it then. And when I got home, the pistol got stolen in a couple of years, but the wallet was always down there in the box. The wallet was always there. Nothing happened to it. Why? I didn't have anything. The other things was all gone. And as the kids were growing up, it just slowly dawned. And I knew I could see all those pictures of those kids. And I thought, well, here, my kids are growing up. I wonder what kind of family that soldier had. And where it was as personal as it was, that made all the difference, see? And yet, I thought how great it would be if that wallet went back with that to that family. But there was no chance of that. You know, I wasn't going over there. Wes always wanted to go. But the opportunities never arose. That's why I think the Lord, there was too many things had to happen for that to happen. And I think the Lord had a hand in it.
So when did this really start to take shape? When did it go from this idea that's out there that, yeah, that would be nice, but there's no way, to, hey, something's happening here?
Well, yeah, a little before, in my 30s or so, when Dad and I would get together, and I'm a history buff, and, you know, I would try to talk more about his war experiences. I just had a curiosity, wanted to know more, and kind of heard the same stories we'd heard as kids. But then one time Dad was visiting me, and I got on my laptop computer, and I discovered the 96th Infantry. I started just doing a little research. 96th Infantry had a website, and there were some photographs on the webpage of some recent trips by veterans back to the battlefield. And I just became just obsessed almost with the fact that I would really like to go back. You know, I was aware of another incident where a man that I had become aware of had traveled back, and just how meaningful that seemed to be for him. And so I guess it was two parts. I wanted to take Dad back and thought maybe he would like to see that area again. And then I just really wanted, before anything happened to Dad, to be back on the same places and maybe hear some more stories and hear stories that I hadn't heard and experience that with him.
Had you ever thought about going back to Okinawa?
No. I didn't see any way that I could possibly go back to Okinawa. I was really concentrating on building a ranch, getting a ranch paid for. Then opportunity just come out of nowhere. Wes can tell you about the opportunities, you know, because we were able to get back, but it was nothing that we could have planned.
What I thought was pretty interesting, though, every time Dad and I would get together, and my mother had passed away, so when Dad and I would get together, you know, we'd talk about the possibility of ever going back. You know, he always brought up the fact that he'd like to try to get that wallet back somehow to whoever that soldier's family was, and so that always kind of impressed me. And so probably about 10 years or so after I really began to feel the strong desire to somehow make that happen, the guy that I worked for at the time, I had a lot of frequent flyer miles built up, and I was always sharing with him incident stories of my dad, sharing with him the desire that I had to take him back there and go back with him. And so lo and behold, here Christmas of 2010, my boss at the time, Andre Giles, says, "Hey, Wes, I want you to have these two round-trip tickets to Okinawa. for Christmas? You go do it. You take your dad and you go back there. It just floored me.
I've heard of Christmas bonuses, but not like that.
Well, so then it was exciting when I had those and couldn't wait to give Dad a call and say, hey, I've got 2 round-trip tickets to Okinawa, so we're going to do this.
And what did you say?
Oh, I thought that was great. Well, that was kind of way out. Well, it was just unbelievable. But Wes is the one that really brought it about. And yeah, it was exciting. And the way things build up so that we could go, you're telling about the tsunami and things like that, see?
Yeah, there's all this hope, here we go. And then there's a, whoa, wait a second, what's going on?
Well, there was a little bit of planning involved. Once I had the tickets, I began in earnest then to really try to make it come about. And the first thing I did is I wanted to determine when the best time to visit Japan was. And I didn't want to make it too far out. You know, Christmas is when I got the tickets or when he made me aware of it. And so, you know, I determined just through doing research that January, you know, was a really good time to visit that country. And so then just began to sweep over me. How am I going to do this? You know, how are we going to drive? How are we going to get around? Once we get there, where are we going to stay? There's so many unknowns, and at times there was almost an overwhelming feeling, but I wanted to go so bad, and here it was just 3 weeks away, basically. We decided to set January 20th as the time when we would go, and so I just began in earnest to try to accomplish that. I first contacted some military bases to see if there's a possibility that we could stay on some of the Marine bases there, and I said, I'm bringing my dad back. He's a veteran of the battle, and I never got much accommodation, you know, and I thought that would be kind of easy, a no-brainer maybe, but, and so it was just began some red tape, and well, you got to put in a request, and anyway, I began to lose a little bit of hope on that. And then so actually one day, just about, oh, maybe 10 days before we were going to leave, it was like throwing a bottle out into the ocean. I had come across, and every night I would research the internet for more information. I'd come across the names of a couple of former Marines who were living in Okinawa and had served as tour guides for another ex-military person. I just came on this information. And so I threw an email out to one of those guys, found out later it was an old email address, and he didn't even see my email until about 2 days before we got there. And then I became aware of another group in Okinawa that was a research group that helped bring back artifacts taken during the war that would help determine where they needed to return to. And I threw an email out to that group. And so for several days, I never heard back from either of those until, I mean, literally days before we were to leave and just go make it happen, I got an email from both of those places literally just days before we were to leave, and it actually took all of the pressure off. The former Marine said, yes, we're still here, absolutely. Our priority is to help former veterans see their where they served, and you will have 2 guides full-time for the entire 5 days you're here, plus our vehicle. You don't worry about a thing. The research group, which is led by Alex Kishaba, who is a native of Okinawa, he was excited about the wallet. He wanted to try to do whatever he could to help us find who that wallet had belonged to. Dad was so set on getting that back. I knew that if we didn't try to make an earnest effort to identify the owner of that wallet, that he'd be disappointed. And in saying that, I didn't have any hope that we could. I just thought, that is so far out there. The little bit of reading I'd done, I'd realized 110,000 Japanese died, you know, ended up just going into the soil of the island. And how in the world could we ever identify one of those? There was some writing on the back of some of the pictures. And so Alex had me send them him copies of the photographs and that writing. And so some hope began to build in that. Actually, just days before we were to leave, there was 2 really promises of good things happening.
But it sounds like you're saying you were just trying to research the wallet to get him off your back so he wouldn't be mad at you.
Well, maybe a little, but I truly did want to make an earnest effort.
What was it like for you, Durrell, when you got there? This island that you haven't been on in 66 years, what was that like for you?
Well, I couldn't believe how it had been built up. All of those little towns and all those places was totally bombed out and destroyed, even to the point of walls standing. And fleas and bugs, everything. And then here we come back, and I couldn't believe the progress that had been made in restoring those towns. There's a couple more incidents that I think is really needs to be told about the fight while I was there. One of them just come to me when I was thinking about fleas and the bugs and that. Before we would go through one of those bombed out towns as we was going across the island, cleaning the Japanese out of the island, we had little cans of DDT. And, you know, look what they think about today. We didn't think anything about. We would dust ourselves with that DDT all over, sprinkle it all over us, and so that when we went through, we could come out the other side halfway clean, you know, keep them bugs away from us. We'd just come through this town, really had been shelled and bombed on the edge of the town. Here's a young lady, a young woman, was laying there dead right along. And there was a little boy, probably 3 years old, and he was sitting there holding her hand, crying. And his face was just really dusty, you know, from the bombs created a lot of dust. And his face was really dusty. Down his cheeks, where the tears had run, was little places, you know, had run down and dripped off his chin. We was under sniper fire, so we had to keep him moving. But we was a whole bunch of kids. As I look back now, there was one guy there that had a family, that was married and had a family. None of the rest of us was. He called him Tobe. He had a family at home, and we thought he was an old man. How come he was still there? Well, we just worked by her. And when Tobe, he was right there by me. Tobe come, and he looked down at that little boy, and he crying. And Tobe just reached out his hand like that. That little kid let go of his mom and reached up and got Tobe's hand. And the last I seen, they were walking on down the road, that little kid with him.
Makes you wonder what ended up happening to that young boy, huh?
Yes, those kind of things is what brought all of this stuff with the wallet.
Yeah, that wallet, as it turns out, would hold the power to connect two families on opposite sides of the world. And 80 years ago, on opposite sides of World War II. We're going to explain how with Wes and Durrell Gibbs when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.